Welcome in, Hokies fans, to this edition of the Tech Sideline podcast as we record on Monday, September 13th, following a Virginia Tech 35-14 win over Middle Tennessee. Hokies now ranked in the top 15 in this week's AP poll, and they get ready for West Virginia week coming up on Saturday from Morgantown. We'll go through the entire game from Saturday, look at the good, the bad, some interesting things we saw from the Hokies against the Blue Raiders, all of that and more coming up on episode 190 of the Tech Sideline podcast, which starts right now. We welcome you in to episode 190 of the Tech Sideline podcast, whether you're listening on SoundCloud, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Google Podcasts, or if you are watching live on the YouTube channel, make sure you like, comment, and subscribe, and drop some questions for Will and Chris in the chat below. We'll get to those later on in the show. I'm Jake Lyman. Across the way, Will Stewart, our founder and general manager. To my left, the lead analyst and columnist for TechSideline.com, Chris Coleman. Behind the scenes, Malcolm Stewart, the best producer in the land once again, and the man in the chair today is Nick Brown. Again, he was here last week, and he'll be keeping us updated on some stats and everything going on when Justin Fuente takes the podium for his weekly press conference at 11:30. Want to remind you that the Tech Sideline podcast is brought to you by the Southeast Regional Training Center. Make sure you donate to the Southeast Regional Training Center to support one of the best and fastest growing wrestling programs in the country. You can find more information and donate today at southeastrtc.com. And I'm Jake Lyman, your host. Will, I want to start with you. Little new addition to the podcast set today for West Virginia week. A little bit of decor around Chris in the middle seat.
Got a little faux plant life around Chris there with some accent lighting,
some flair.
Yeah. We're filling in all the dark spots slowly, and I'm pumped because we've got some. We've ordered a prototype, for us it's a prototype boom arm and mic and shock mount setup that I think you'll see debut with Chris next week. So, you know, we continue to kind of battle the sound issues here, you know, so I think that'll help.
Seems like every single week when we step on here for our Monday podcast, there's something new. So excited to see the new mics coming in.
Yeah, so I'm the head honcho, but I do like doing that kind of stuff. And Malcolm does a good job with putting the lighting in and stuff like that. So it's the little things. It's always those parts of our job that we enjoy and other parts we don't.
Well, before we hop into Virginia Tech's win, I do want to jump back to yesterday. Sunday, NFL started, and a couple of Hokies got in on the action, most namely Tyrod Taylor, the starter for the Houston Texans. We talked about him last time out. He looked pretty good for Houston, beating Jacksonville at home.
So I turned on the NFL Network last night just for a few minutes, and I caught, I assume it was their highlight package from the game, and it was Trevor Lawrence. Oh, yeah, Tyrod did well. Trevor Lawrence, right.
He threw three picks. Trevor Lawrence did,
yeah. Not Tyrod, yeah.
Tyrod made a really nice throw. It was almost Patrick Mahomes-like, moving to his left, evaded a tackler, and threw it 60 yards downfield to Brandon Cooks.
That was the throw that put him on the scene at Tech when he was a freshman in 2007.
Yeah.
Remember, it was a pass against Florida State, a deep ball, where he was rolling to his left, and he threw a deep ball to the corner of the end zone across his body, probably 40 or 50 yards downfield. And that's when you really realized, wow, this guy's got a ton of natural talent.
So did anybody actually watch the game? Like he no. I've always thought that the one thing he needed to do is be more of a risk taker, give his guys chances to make plays. Did he do some of that yesterday?
Well, that throw for sure was a risk. He threw it almost into double coverage, but it was a perfect throw downfield. Right. I was watching Red Zone most of the day, so I saw a bunch of his touchdowns and when they got close to the goal line, but didn't see his entire game.
Nice.
Well, I do want to start with the Hokies moving into the top 15 in the rankings before we jump into Middle Tennessee. Highest the Hokies have been ranked since back in 2018, I believe, and that was the week of the Old Dominion game. So Hokies are starting to move up in the rankings, moving up four spots in the AP poll, six in the coaches poll, and a chance to kind of put themselves on the scene with a win over West Virginia this week.
So, Nick, can you do me a favor and pull up OxVT's Twitter feed? I think he tweeted out that And he included a graphic with it that Virginia Tech's been ranked every year Since 1993, I think.
With the exception
For 2015.
2015.
Yeah,
yeah. Wow. Yes. So that's pretty cool.
Been ranked at least 1 week.
Yes.
Yeah.
Not that they
at least 1 week per season. Yeah.
Confirmed.
So that you said they were ranked 12th going into the ODU game?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then never bounced back.
Yeah. So was it, how do I ask this question? Looking back even further than 2015, like how high did they get in some of the rankings?
2012 got to 13th. 2011 got to 5.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, we were automatically ranked high at the beginning of every year back then.
Yeah. So what about like 13 and 14?
13 was 16, 14 was 17 after the Ohio State win, and then the loss to ECU.
Yeah. All right, so unranked. 15th is pretty good.
That is a crazy stat, though. I mean, that's almost 30 years in a row, with the exception of 1 year, that you're ranked at least once. I mean,
you can argue that's more impressive than the bowl streak, right? Because like 80 teams were going to bowls, more than 80.
You go 6-6 every year, you're going to have a bowl streak. So,
So it's a shame they never got ranked in the 2015 season. Then
2017 also got to 12. So did 18 also got to 12 too.
Okay, all right. So that's what they're shooting for.
Yep.
Wow. Well, looking at that Middle Tennessee game, maybe a little bit of apprehension from Virginia Tech fans early on in that one. The ODU and James Madison losses may have people feeling a little bit shaky. And it was a little bit of a slow start for the Hokies, especially offensively. Couldn't move the ball a little bit.
Yeah, it was a very vanilla game plan. For all I know, like, they just kept the exact same game plan from the UNC game without changing anything, which I expect sometimes that's what you do if you have a down opponent in between two big games or whatever. But it was clear to me that they did not think Middle Tennessee State could threaten them because they don't have the firepower offensively. And they can afford to do that this year because Tech's got a much better defense than they have than they had during the 2018 ODU loss, of course. Or last year during the Liberty loss, which it wasn't a functional defense because they couldn't practice the scheme before the season started. But everything this year is much more functional. Like, they could go out there and they just played base defense against Middle Tennessee. I'm not going to say there was no specific game planning for Middle Tennessee, because there always has to be some alignment tweaks here and there based on formations. But for the most part, that was just Virginia Tech's base scheme that they would, like, install and practice in the spring with very little bells and whistles adjusted for a specific opponent. So they were confident in their defense's ability to go out there and dominate the game, that they could do something like that. And I think Tech has come a long way in terms of talent and experience on the defensive side of the ball since 2018.
Well, so I was thinking about, I went hard to the hole in my prediction. I predicted like 45-10. I wanted to see, big run up. And David and Chris were a little more reserved. They were kind of mid-30s, low teens.
I had 38-10. Mm-hmm. And before they scored that second touchdown against Tech's second and third string defense, it was actually 35-7. So I had a margin.
See.
Right.
So, I wasn't real thrilled with the first half like anybody else. But I've thought about some things since then. So I went back and I watched the game last night. And, Tech struggled on offense in the first couple of possessions. And the thinking going – so this is one of the things you fall into when you're not real familiar with your opponent, like we aren't. We can look at a roster and see who they're starting and how old they are and what their size is, but what you can't see is what scheme are they running. And so Fuente talked about this after the game. Middle Tennessee kind of runs the pit scheme, and you can even argue that it's like an old Virginia Tech scheme where you just put all kinds of guys on the line and you play, physical press coverage. And so, like, some of the early runs, it was not a case of so the thinking was, oh, they're small and young, we should be able to just run them over. And in watching the film, when the running plays didn't work, for the most part, it wasn't a case of a guy not blocking well. It was just they had so many guys on the line and so many guys in the box that they were stopping the run. So I felt a little better after watching the game and thinking about it. But again, would I have picked differently if I'd known that's how they play football? Maybe, because we had come out of the UNC game thinking, I don't know about the wide receivers.
Yeah.
And if I had known that they were going to put 7 or 8 guys in the box, maybe I would have pumped the brakes a little bit down into the mid-30s.
Well, the thing is, we don't run Brandon Patterson's previews until Friday.
Exactly.
And he talked about that in his preview. Yeah. I think the running game was strong. I think Tech has out-physicaled both of their opponents so far at the line of scrimmage, which is a good sign. Again, like, my only negative is there needs to be – the passing game needs to ramp up, and we can get into this a little more later if you want to. But the passing game needs to be better, and there's multiple things that they could do across multiple positions, I think, to make it better. But the bigger issue to me, and this is seems to be a trend over the last few years, is the wide receivers are really struggling to get separation, get away from cornerbacks.
You could see Burmeister going through his reads, and he had time. You know? So, yeah, we'll get into that more later.
Well, we can get into it now. I mean, the big play was Trey Turner downfield. He had a big post route that ended up being, I want to say, 47 yards downfield. But outside of that, you look at that game, there wasn't a lot of those big shot plays from Burmeister because it seemed like nobody was getting separation downfield.
They weren't. Turner's completion that you had just alluded to was the one and only time that happened. It's interesting.
And that was a blown coverage.
I don't know if it was so much a blown coverage. I think he did like a it's the replay doesn't really make it clear, but I thought he juked the guy at the line of scrimmage and got him off balance and then ran by.
Okay.
But I could be wrong on that. It's kind of odd. You know, you look at Tavion Robinson and you see, oh, he's 5'10", he should be a slot receiver. And then Trey Turner, oh, he's 6'2", he should be an outside receiver. And I'm not so sure, like, that Turner wouldn't be more effective in the slot. That play came out of the slot. And he's just so skinny. Like, he doesn't have much muscle mass. So a big, strong corner on the outside can match up and get right in his face and play press man, and he'll struggle to get off the line of scrimmage. But if you line him in the slot, he's off the line of scrimmage, and he can get a running start, and you could even send him in motion and things like that. I think he might actually be more effective as a slot receiver, whereas Tavion's a little more solid, might be more effective as an outside receiver, which is what they're playing him a lot. Now, the issue with Tavion, he's just not very fast. He can't burn anybody.
Quick, but not fast.
He's quick, yes. But not fast. Yeah. They had a play on Saturday where he was matched up one-on-one on the outside, and you know, Tech checked down to it, and it was man coverage, and there was one option. You throw to Tavion Robinson. That was the play, and everybody else is a dummy route. And, you know, he just couldn't get by the cornerback. And, you know, I don't know if this is true, but Bill Roth is a professional who does his job, so I assume it is. But Middle Tennessee's starting corners were out with COVID protocols. So
that's their backups.
Right, so that's a problem. Wow. Now, I do think the secondary is a strength of their team. Their safeties are very, very good.
Yeah.
Blankenship is like a six, it's going to like be a five-year like starter.
And a mid-round pick,
right,
I think he's predicted.
Right, because he's taken advantage of his COVID year this year, right? A poor guy had to quarantine for 48 days last year.
Bill told that story twice.
I can't imagine.
He had to stay in his apartment for 48 days.
While you're recovering from a broken leg, by the way.
Oh,
so
my gosh.
That guy deserves to get – wherever he gets drafted, he deserves it. But I do think that's the strength of their team. But at the same time, you're a little disappointed and – and fans, obviously, the first thing they look at is star ranking. So when you have two former four-star receivers as your starting wide receivers and they're kind of struggling to get separation against Middle Tennessee wide receivers, that becomes disappointing. And but I think that that's kind of a trend, and I think that's something they'll have to evaluate in the offseason. I think when you look up and down the Virginia Tech roster, you've seen defensive backs like Jermaine Waller and Caleb Farley and Shamari Connor improve tremendously from their freshman year to later in their careers. And James Mitchell and Christian Darrisaw. You can go up and down the line. Plenty of defensive linemen that are just much better football players as juniors and seniors. Tywan Garbutt's another one, a good example. Belmar before he got hurt.
Yeah.
Guys just improved a lot from when they were freshmen to where they are or were later in their careers. And you just don't see that from the Tech wide receivers. I'm not going to say those guys haven't improved, but their improvement has been marginal. For the most part, they're kind of the same guys they were as freshmen. And you don't want the same thing to happen to Dwayne Lofton and Jalen Jones and Jaden Paiute. So that's something that's going to have to be looked at in the offseason, I think, in my opinion, a thorough analysis of wide receiver development
I think that's fair. Yeah.
I agree, and I think you looked at Tavion Robinson. His big play was the touchdown that opened up the scoring on Saturday, and it seemed like, and correct me if I'm wrong, they had to scheme him open on that kind of a
that,
little.
That was normal. That was a well. That's a base play the Tech runs in the red zone.
I don't recall the play. I rewatched.
Well,
it just
he was the slot receiver, and I guess it was Caleb Smith on the outside, and Caleb Smith ran a slant route, but in reality, he was not.
He was picking.
He was just picking the nickel back, and creating space, and he barely actually touched.
That was the fade. Yeah.
He played it really well. Generally speaking, you see contact on that play, and you're always kind of worried that they're going to throw an offensive pass interference. Yeah. Caleb Smith ran it really well. Like, he got in the guy's way without hitting him, and made the guy just adjust his route. So that, and Tavion shook loose from him. I think Tavion was ahead of him anyway. But yeah, that's a common route for Tech. That's a tough play to stop if the receiver runs the route correctly and the ball's on the money.
And the officials are generally very forgiving where that's concerned. If you don't out and out run into the defensive back, they let you get away with it. You know, and I go back long enough to where I remember a time where that play didn't exist, and now every team runs that kind of play where you cross two receivers. And it's a bang-bang play, and it's a really difficult play for the defenders to make.
You'd be interested in knowing when that started. It had to be like somebody tried it in a game one time, and then they've realized, oh, refs aren't going to call that. And then everybody else probably just slowly picked up on it.
Yeah, there's just, you know, there's been a general movement for a long time now to favor the offenses in certain situations. They get away with a lot more holding than they used to, you know, when I was young and played football. I remember when I played football when I was a kid, I was an offensive lineman, and we were taught to put the arms in here and block like this. You know, and these days they're taught to get the hands inside and grab. Yeah,
so you couldn't use your hands. That's how you
were taught. We were taught not to use our hands.
Wow.
And the funny thing is, it's Little League football. It's not like the refs are even going to see it. You know, of course, I'm a moron. I play by the rules. I should have been grabbing kids and throwing them down all over the place.
Well, I think that play specifically maybe caused the entire Virginia Tech fan base to exhale, because before that, it was a scoreless game late in the first quarter, and Braxton Burmeister had just left the game. He comes back in first play as a touchdown pass to Tavion Robinson. I think maybe there was a little bit of everybody's a little bit scared when Burmeister went down and had to come off to the sidelines.
You know, from the stands, that happened right in front of me. And I looked down, and he's got, when you see like his arms on the ground and his palms are straight up, right? So I thought he was knocked out unconscious.
Wow.
So I was really surprised when he came back in the game. But it turns out it was just a stinger, but just the way his body looked, sprawled out, he looked like he'd been knocked unconscious. I can't imagine what like a stinger to your shoulder feels like. Ugh. Or your throwing shoulder.
Yeah.
It's a boot, you know?
Yeah, and then he comes in and he throws that dime, and you know, I listened to him closely in the post-game interviews. He sounded sharp.
I did too. Yeah, he sounded fine.
No slurring.
Didn't sound loopy or anything.
He wasn't
like
slurring
that.
His words. he's a tough dude, man. Like, you would think after you go through something like that, the next time you scramble down the field, you might be a little more hesitant. He was diving right in there head first the rest of the game, which – man, save that for when you really need it. There's going to be a time this year where to win a football game, you know, he's going to have to, you know, dive head first like that to pick up an extra couple yards. I don't want him doing that against Middle Tennessee. Like, I don't care if Tech beats Middle Tennessee 42-7 or 28-14. just win the game and don't take unnecessary risks like that.
And I think you're right. I think it might have been the second play of the next drive. He lowered the shoulder trying to get a first down. I was like, calm down.
Dude, quit that.
It's okay. Yeah. I don't think we expected to see three quarterbacks on the field for the Hokies on Saturday. Knox Kadem obviously had to come in when Braxton Burmeister got hurt, but Connor Blummer comes in, can kind of be that Swiss Army knife, maybe take the place of where Quincy Patterson was.
You know, I think I liked when they let Blummer score the touchdown, because at that point, Burmeister had already been hit on his shoulder. And you're like, okay, if you're going to run it in with a quarterback, let somebody else do it and save some wear and tear. It's, you know, Blumrick, it's like they show no signs of letting him throw the football, right?
So right. Fuente says he can, but like I said, I mean, last week, pay attention not to what he says, but what he does.
He can throw it. Can he pass it? I think he'll throw a pass at some point this year. the smoke and mirrors running play, the fake rocket motion to pay, which, I mean, worked perfectly. That wasn't about getting an extra touchdown against Middle Tennessee. That was about putting that play on film before the West Virginia game.
I agree. Do we have any clue if that was a read and he went with it, or think it was that way all the way?
I don't know. David Cunningham,
if you're listening, ask Fuente that question.
I do know you have three options on that play, and I don't know if this is quarterback option. I expect it's play call option because in this particular play, Tavion was blocking downfield and not running a route.
Which side?
On the right. He was a lead blocker.
Where,
Tavion had an amazing run blocking score this week. It was like 86 or 87 or something. Yeah, cool. Texas receivers are really, for whatever their inability to get open, they're really good blockers.
Block.
Yeah, which is important. But, you know, you could potentially pitch that ball to Jaden Paiute on the rocket motion. You could run it like he did, or you can call that as a passing play where Tavion or whichever wide receiver's on that side goes down the field, fakes his block, and then keeps running. And then your quarterback is rolling out to his right, and he's throwing on the right side of the field. So you have – that puts it in their head. There are three different things you can do.
Right. So at first I was thinking, oh, man, you wasted that play against Middle Tennessee.
You got two other things you can do off of. Yeah.
And I like you invoking Quincy Patterson's name because I felt like that play with Blumrick was way more complex and interesting than anything they ever ran with Quincy. With Quincy, it was just take the ball and run up. Except for the one against North Carolina.
Where he rolled right and threw left.
No, where he went out, planted his foot, and
right. Well, that was there was nothing intricate about that play. It was a base,
but it wasn't just up the middle. Painting a picture,
but
of
it was still the most basic power play you could possibly do. Well, I followed Quincy's mom on Twitter, and I didn't realize I still did, but last night I'm just going through Twitter, and all of a sudden I'm getting all these North Dakota State highlight retweets. I'm like, why am I seeing this on my Twitter feed? And because they won like 62-0 or something like that, and he had some highlights, and he's just running for 60-yard touchdowns, and those little tiny FCS guys can't do anything about it.
Oh, man. I hope I get to see one of those games this year. I gotta pull that stuff up on ESPN Plus or whatever they're calling it.
Well, and I think the difference between Blumrick and Quincy Patterson is maybe that they trusted Quincy Patterson if he had to throw the ball, they knew he could. Fuente says he can throw the ball, but you would assume almost anybody on the team can throw it. Do you think they trust him to throw it?
You can throw it, but can you pass it? And there's a big difference. Like, there's been plenty of guys in the world with great arms, but they just weren't good in the passing game when it comes to timing or just the feel of the game and everything like that. And I would assume that's what held Blumrick back at Texas A&M, because when I saw him in the preseason, I thought his arm was strong enough.
Right.
And he's obviously a good athlete and everything like that. Yeah. I think he's one of those guys that can certainly be effective on plays where you've got one read. I think he can be an effective player when it comes to that. I think Tech wants a little more from their quarterback play this year and in the future, because they've been one read, you know, for the last couple of years with Hooker and then with Burmeister last year not knowing the offense yet. They're a multi-read offense now, or at least it seems like that way to me in the passing game. It's just, you know, that first read's not getting open, and he's looking down to a second read. He's also not open, and there's some trust issues. I mean, you talk about him. Sometimes he does seem to hesitate and not fire the ball in there, and I'm changing the topic of conversation back to Burmeister again. Some of that is due to him. Like they're not getting open, and those timing routes are based on trust. Like, you have to throw that ball before the receiver makes his break, before he gets separation. And those guys, they're not getting separation, so there is a trust – there is a lack of trust there, it seems.
But to me, it's everything. You're correct on that. And then there was a play that I noticed. I also think he's missing receivers.
Yeah.
There's a play I noticed in particular where in they snapped the ball and Gallo went to the right, and Burmeister briefly looked in his direction, then looked somewhere else, and Gallo was open like 8-10 yards downfield, standing on the sideline by himself,
and Burmeister ended up scrambling to the right and then throwing it out of bounds.
That's the play. Yes. So he never saw Gallo. So there's also that. And then they talked about in the post game, I heard I heard Burmeister in the car, and I think I watched Fuentes' portion later on YouTube. They actually put it on YouTube, which I didn't think they were doing anymore. But they both talked about he's not firing the ball in there, and in some cases, and it gets back to what we were saying about Tyrod not, you know, so they're and then it goes way back into the beginning of the podcast when you said they're trying to figure out what can these receivers and this quarterback do
together. Yeah. Like, what are they both good at, so they can combine that all together. You know, there's a happy medium that you want to find. Like,
you don't want Ryan Willis always.
Right. Or even like Brewer was a gunslinger, man. Yeah. And but, you know, sometimes that got him into trouble and he would throw
picks. The Georgia Tech game.
Right.
Where he threw that pick that basically lost the game.
Right. So that's what you get. And you know, you're gonna take some chances and make some throws and you're gonna make some big plays out of him, but every now and then, you know,
it's going to cost you
a game.
And so you may see more of that as the season goes on. You know, Burmeister taking risks that wind up hurting him.
If they tell him to take more risks, he'll listen to them.
Yeah.
But it also could mean more mistakes.
Yeah. I'm it's hard to picture a football coach telling his quarterback to be a little more careless with the ball. But, so I put this stat on Twitter. Virginia Tech's opponents in 21 possessions have not started on Tech's side of the field. So far, Tech has one turnover. Is that right on the season?
Yes, I believe.
Yeah. Keyshawn's fumble.
The Keyshawn fumble. No, Burmeister threw an interception.
Oh,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And so let's throw the other stat out there. Tech is tied for second in the country in penalties per game.
Yeah, Tech's doing everything right from in the little things this year.
And as far special teams,
playing small ball. Like, there's another rule that I learned from watching James Sheba's teams play special teams is that you can fair catch a punt that bounces.
Interesting.
Yes. Tavion did that.
Yeah, quick wave. And
I had I don't think I had any idea that you could fair catch a punt that bounced. Huh. There have been several special teams rules that I've learned over the last 5 or 6 years just from watching Virginia Tech play special teams. It seems like Sheebus knows all these little small rules that nobody knows, and then you see our players do it. Like at Notre Dame when there was a short kickoff, and our return man, our up man, he stuck his feet out of bounds and then reached down and grabbed the football. And that gave Tech the ball at the 35-yard line.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I never would have guessed. So you like to see them winning hidden yardage games like that because you never know when that'll win you a football game. It might have won them the UNC game just based on UNC's starting field position for the entire game.
Yeah, yeah. So that's that hidden yardage stuff that is so important. And I forgot to look and see how many penalties Middle Tennessee had, but it was a lot.
Yeah, and some critical ones too.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, it does seem overall, just through two games, very few mistakes from Virginia Tech. In all three phases of the game, you can look maybe North Carolina, they misplayed that screen. But outside of that, there haven't been that many errors on either side of the ball.
Yeah, they've played clean games, and you're not going to play like 12 clean games throughout the season where you dominate the turnover margin and the time of possession and everything goes right for you. It's just, when is that bad game or two going to happen? I hope it's against Richmond.
And not because WVU or Miami.
Yes,
yes,
exactly.
Yeah. So the Twitterati is already marking the fact that I said that about penalties and no starting on the side of the field. They're like, okay, it's going to be your fault.
You're hoping the mistake-filled game is one you can actually win with all of those mistakes. So Richmond may be the answer there. I think it's a good time to take our break here on episode 190 of the Tech Sideline podcast. When we come back, we're going to go through special teams, which made a big impact on the game on Saturday. The defense had a few players who had some big games, and we're also going to go through young players who came in later on that maybe impressed Will and Chris. Make sure you stay with us here on episode 190 of the Tech Sideline podcast, brought to you by the Southeast Regional Training Center. We'll be right back. We We welcome you back on episode 190 of the Tech Sideline podcast brought to you by the Southeast Regional Training Center. We apologize for the longer than normal break. If you were watching on YouTube live or archive, you can see that Chris Coleman is now holding his own mic. A little bit of technical difficulties during the break.
I'm sorry. I think this is funny. Chris doesn't think it's funny.
I don't think it's funny. Ideally, we would like to sell a sponsorship for the podcast one day. And maybe that doesn't work if our mics are falling out of place. Yeah.
Yeah, plus Chris almost got decapitated by the clamp flying off the table.
Yeah, it almost like slingshotted off the table.
I don't think I want you to put any of that extra stuff up here that you've been talking about. It's probably See, now just going to fall paranoid. Off and take me out.
You're going to be like that cat that was hanging off the, what is it, Hard Rock Stadium?
Caught by the American flag.
Sort of. He kind of went through the flag.
He lived.
One guy on the corner didn't hold up his corner very well. For those of you that don't know what we're talking about, there was a cat in a precarious position at Hard Rock Stadium at the Miami Hurricanes game the other day. You can find it on my Twitter feed. I retweeted it. This cat fell a long way. You know that whole poster thing of just hang on, just baby? Hang on. Well, the cat couldn't hang on.
It did its best for a while. It was clinging on for dear life for probably a minute. Minute and a half.
It must have fought. What was that? 30 or 40 feet that cat fell?
Yeah.
How did he get there in the first place is the better question.
Uh-huh. Right.
Cats.
He got to the upper deck somehow.
And then out on a line. Anyway, let's make the second half of this podcast somewhat short. You have no idea how difficult it actually is to hold this thing.
Although, yeah, those things are heavy. Well, and
we've gotten through offense. Let's go to special teams now. A little bit of Beamer ball on Saturday against Middle Tennessee. The opening kickoff goes back across midfield, mm-hmm. and then Tavion Robinson really got things going in Tech's direction with a long punt return. Almost took it to the house. Do you think those two guys, King and Robinson, can be the explosive guys in the return game that the Hokies need?
You left out the one where King barely got tripped.
Yes.
Right. Well, that got called back for a penalty.
Oh, yet. That's true. That's right.
Yeah, so that one. But anyway. But yet at the same time, you know, he shows, you know, he's making the right, he has the right vision, I think, for kickoff return and things like that.
Beam Blackshear is trying to hold him back on that play also.
Yeah, right. I know. that, I remember that.
So Blackshear's going, don't run, and King runs by him. And yeah. Blackshear's like, oh, great.
Yeah, uh-huh. Robinson's punt return was for, what, 44 yards?
Yeah, he was backpedaling inside the 10. He was across midfield. So.
Well, Tech only had, I believe, 59 yards or something like that in punt return yardage last year. The entire season.
Yes.
So to have 44 on one play, that's a
credit to Andy
sign.
Bitter for that.
That Andy? Yeah.
Well, I think that's important because Tavion Robinson seemed like he lost a lot of his confidence in the return game last year. It seems like he's got a lot of that back, kind of likening back to his freshman year when he was explosive back there.
Yeah, and he talked about that in the preseason, wanting to get back to his freshman form. And he flat out admitted that like he took it for granted and maybe didn't work as hard on it last year as some others.
Well, and I remember you said that in an earlier podcast, and my first reaction was, what? And then I remembered, you know, COVID. It affects everybody.
I'm not going to judge him too bad.
What anybody did,
Yeah. Who knows? Maybe he didn't. There were certain practices where he didn't even have a punter to punt to him because of COVID. I mean, I'm serious. It's possible.
It's true.
Yeah. Had some GA throwing him a football in the air. to look like hand over hand.
Well, the special teams definitely helped, but it was really the defense that helped the Hokies kind of pull away. There was a couple of issues with blown coverages at times. Some wide receivers ended up getting down the field, which we didn't see against North Carolina. But one big thing I took in the secondary is that Jermaine Waller seems to be right back where he was in 2019.
Yeah, and as far as the coverage goes, Tech mostly played like a very base zone. Yes. So there was a little bit of space between the safeties and the cornerbacks, and you saw them
and the corners played off the ball.
Right. Yeah.
So did you notice if you watched the replay, there was a play where it was probably 3rd and 8 or something like that, and Chatman backpedaled like 12 yards off the ball.
Yeah.
And came up to make the tackle, but Middle Tennessee picked up the first down. And then Chatman started kind of fussing at his sideline, and then it was very quick and very subtle. But Eddie Royal, who was a color analyst, and I thought, hey, he did a good job. Eddie caught it. He's like, Chatman looks like he's upset that he's not being allowed to get up and play closer and play press coverage.
Well, they're going to mix up their coverages a lot more against West Virginia this week. Yeah. I'm sure they will. So I'm not worried about that. Like I said, it was everything about that game was vanilla.
Oh, yeah.
And on both sides
of the
ball.
Very little blitzing on defense.
Yeah. To your point about Waller, yeah, that dude is if anybody on this team, their NFL stock has done like that through this year, it's him. I mean, he was already a really good corner before, but he was overshadowed a bit by Caleb Farley. Yes. But both of his picks this year have been elite interceptions, like top notch. Especially the one against Middle Tennessee. You know, he was defending the slot receiver on the left side of the field, had to run with him on a crossing pattern all the way across the field, and then undercut him to get that interception.
He basically ran the route for him.
Yeah, that was an amazing play.
Nick, can you do me a favor and see if you can find a listing of interception leaders for Virginia Tech year by year? I think if you go to Hokie Sports and find more and go to the records.
Hosley leads that all time.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm interested in knowing because Waller's got two in two games. When was the last time somebody had five or six or seven? You know, I barely remember this from when I was a kid, but Gene Bunn is still Virginia Tech's career interception leader with 18.
And then they didn't throw the ball much back then.
He did that in 3 years.
Wow.
Back when they didn't throw the ball very much. So.
Yep. J-Ron Hosley. 2010 had nine, and then Ron Davidson back in 1967 with nine. And then
so
career is 18.
That's incredible.
In what year?
1967. J-Ron
Hosley, which year?
2010.
Didn't he pick off Russell Wilson like three times in one game that year? Was that year?
Yep, you nailed that. Yep, 2010.
So what about since? What's the most since 2010?
Looks like Kendall.
With what, five?
Yeah.
Wow. All right.
So Waller in that conversation early. I mean, he's on a good pace.
Hey, if he gets nine, we'll win a lot of games.
Yeah, that's and that's like a year when Tech had 22 or some insane number.
Yeah,
like
that 2010 year was insane.
Yeah,
I think one of the trends I noticed on defense on Saturday is that the team is playing very fast. You look at Waller and Chatman, Dax was all around the ball, Jamari Connor, Nasir Peoples. It seemed like all of them were just flying to the football and making plays all day long.
Yeah, I thought so. I thought they do have speed in most positions, I would say. I don't think they're elite. I don't think they have elite athleticism at defensive end outside of Barno. But other than that, yeah, I do think they're a defense that does have range and solid athleticism. And that's even without, you know, Keontae Jenkins out there for this game, who is probably, I would guess, the fastest, like, straight-ahead speed of all the safeties, if I had to guess. I don't know. But I thought Peoples played well again. He did kind of get lost in coverage the one time in the zone. But, again, Tech's going to mix up their coverages more against West Virginia this week. So I'm not taking a lot out of that one. But I think, yeah, they do run to the ball. I think, well, you're seeing the differences in, quite frankly, of what it's like to be able to practice a new scheme and not being able to practice it. I mean, it's just, it's a lot easier to play when you know what you're doing. You can look a lot faster. Like Tech's defense, it didn't look fast last year because those guys didn't know what to do.
Yep. It seems like they were playing more on Saturday than thinking about, okay, where do I need to be? It was just go get it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I want to talk about the middle linebacker position.
Yes.
I kept my mouth shut when we talked about Dax before the season. just not sure if the switch to Mike would really be that different. The early returns are yes. He's, you know, if I think he's looked much more decisive in the running game. His rush defense grade is up. He's graded out the first couple of games on PFF as good or better than individual games of previous years.
Yeah, yeah.
And granted, it's only two games, but his season grade so far this year is higher than he's had at any point in his career, and in particular the run defense is better. So I think he's looked good. And so tell me if you agree with this, Chris. I see Hamilton doing two things that Bud typically didn't do. Number one was he tends to pull the mic more often.
He'll do it a
passing
lot.
Downs.
And, you know, once we let the evidence add up, like, what's the cutoff point for that? Is it, like, third and six or longer? Or I'm not sure about that yet. But I think it's – I definitely think he is more open to getting out of his base scheme in specific situations.
Yeah.
You know, Bud did have a dime package that he would break out for certain teams and certain opponents. If they had a really good passing quarterback, he could bring in a, you know, like Shagog back in 2016 and 2017 was the guy in that role. Hamilton seems like he's going to do it more. You know, Hamilton played in Bud Foster's scheme, but he also played in the Saban-Belichick scheme when he was in the NFL. And, you know, he's coached at some other places. So
was that when he was with the Browns? Was Belichick with the Browns?
Belichick was not with the Browns, but somebody, Romeo Crennel, I believe, was with the Browns, was the Browns coach then, and he came out of that tree.
Yeah.
The Saban-Belichick tree.
Okay.
And, you know, you can see some elements of 3-4 in Tech's scheme. I mean, they've got one of their defensive ends standing up a lot. Sometimes they'll drop him back into coverage. So you'll see some of Bud Foster, but I don't know that you'll be able to, outside of, you know, there'll be games, you know, where Tech will man up with their cornerbacks on the outside. They didn't do it against Middle Tennessee, but they'll spend the whole game manning up at cornerback on the outside, like against UNC. But other than that, I don't know that you'll see a whole lot of similarities between Justin Hamilton's scheme and Foster's scheme. Yeah.
So the other thing he did was, I was very surprised to see Keyshawn Artis play and play early. So
he did. I saw him out there in the second quarter, yeah.
Yeah, and he was in for multiple series in a row, and I don't think Dax was hurt or anything like that.
Well, he doesn't play Dax's position. He plays Tisdale's position.
Oh, he's a backer. Yeah.
And Tisdale has not graded out.
That's funny because he looks like a Mike.
Oh, I know. I was surprised a little bit when that move was made. Tisdale did not grade out well this game again for the second game in a row. Didn't, for whatever reason, he's just doesn't seem to be playing as well as I thought he would play this year. Artis graded out really well. Especially in pass defense, which is where you might think that may be a weakness in backer. So that's something to watch for, right?
There may be other teams that can pick on him more. As more film gets out there, they may see him and go after him. I don't know. He may be good. I may just be totally wrong.
It's hard to say. Dean Ferguson also played a decent number of snaps at Mike. I believe around between 20 and 25. And he graded out pretty well. Like, he was only like narrowly behind Dax in his overall grade.
Yeah. And Dax, I think, and these are preliminary grades.
Yes.
I think Dax graded out sixth on the defense.
Yeah, something like that.
So he's having a good year. So far, two games in, I feel better about that position.
Well, that brings me right into where I wanted to go. We talked about, back on Wednesday, young players you wanted to see in the game. Who impressed you that came in later on that fourth quarter when the Hokies were able to empty the bench a little bit?
Well, I think Dean Ferguson looks the part out there. I saw some quickness out of McCray, although he's still not big enough and he needs to redshirt. It only took me 50 minutes or so to say that.
52 minutes. 52 although minutes. We started a little late, so probably 50 minutes.
Cole Nelson, I did think looked fine, and he can help the team this year. Matthias Carroll got out there at defensive end, but he needs to redshirt because he's not going to be big enough. I think he could also play against Richmond, but then other than that, just redshirt him, you know, and don't play him. Panay got in there at defensive tackle, and I don't think that's because they're looking to play him at defensive tackle. I just think it's right now they're so thin on backup defensive tackles, they don't have any choice. If they want to get all their freshman defensive ends in the game, then one of them's going to have to play defensive tackle because they don't really have any defensive tackles outside their top five. And even outside of their top five, or even outside their top four, like, I don't know where Max Philpott was on Saturday. Like, normally you would expect him to be the fifth defensive tackle. I didn't see him out there, so it means maybe he's hurt. So Panay was actually their fifth defensive tackle on Saturday.
Right.
And their sixth defensive tackle was, oh my gosh, Will, you don't
is
have,
it not listed on the
Nigel Simmons.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, who has been a defensive end in the past.
Yep.
And I don't think they really view either one of those guys as defensive tackles. They just have to play him there because they don't have anybody else.
Yeah, Simmons is 260.
Right.
So that's all very insightful commentary, but what I was really thinking was, when Chris says red shirt, we need to install red lights and sirens that go off. Now, the other thing is he says smoke and mirrors a lot.
Yeah.
We need a smoke machine on the floor that when Chris says smoke
that's
and mirrors, it
idea.
Just goes whoosh and shoots smoke up on
you. Yeah, we just need to get some buttons over to Malcolm to do that. Just
that's right.
Pay attention, red shirt. Get the red lights going.
I don't know, man. Maybe we should fix our microphones first.
Well, that's on the way.
Somehow I think smoke machines would somehow end up as like going off as bombs all over the place. Oh yeah, there's a smoke detector right there.
I don't think that would go well. There's
one right above.
Yeah, a sprinkler.
Sprinkler. That would just.
Don't think that would be a great idea.
Say goodbye to the television if that sprinkler goes off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think all we need to do for the red shirt is just change these white lights and make it maybe get a different setting, and you can click it, just get the red light.
Yes, that's true. So is anybody on YouTube right now saying, this is why I'm here for that kind of stuff? Nick's like, no.
Yeah. Yeah, everybody on there praising
them. Everybody's like, finally, they're joking around after an hour.
Well, let's jump into some YouTube questions since we've got Nick over here looking at it. Anybody asking anything good in the YouTube chat?
Not many crazy questions today. A lot of them looking forward to the West Virginia game. Nothing was... The big one was a lot of people were surprised that you played offensive line.
Right. So when I was a kid... I so I started playing football in fifth grade, and gosh, how do I put this? When I was a kid, I had a big butt, which is funny because I don't now. I don't have a butt, so I think it just came in at a certain size and stayed there. But I do remember the first week of practice, the coach looking at me, and I think how he phrased it was, "You got a low center of gravity." Plus, I was a pretty decent bench presser when I was a kid, so, you know, offensive line. And I was not tall, but I was not short, you know. So I remember the weight limit back then was 135 pounds, and I weighed 125 and had a big butt. So onto the offensive line I went. I played guard for 4 years of fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth grade. Then when I played ninth grade, they put me at center, and that was bad. That was our football team was really awful, and I remember, again, this is why you're here, everybody. I remember, boy, my ninth grade football coach did not like me for some reason, and I remember at one point we sucked, and we used to be getting blown out all the time, and there was some game where we were losing by 4, 5, 6 touchdowns, and the coach literally goes, "Is there anybody who hadn't played?" Now, this is a team where they stuck all the skinny kids who hadn't gone through puberty yet. They all played wide out. We must have 14 wide outs, right? We got two centers, me and a guy named Chris Williams, and I backed Chris Williams up. And the coach is like, "Is there anybody who hadn't played yet?" And guess who was the only kid on the sideline who hadn't played yet? Me. So I raise my hand. He's like, "All right, go in." And I'm trotting in, and I'm thinking, yeah, I need to not play football anymore. It's not just this coach. I'm getting too small, too slow, and too nice for this game. So that's my football story.
I played 1 year of tackle football when I was in sixth grade, and I was the quarterback. And one of our last games, we played a team that was just – they were bigger than us. They were better than us. And every time I went back, we only ran play-action passes. So I would turn, fake the handoff, and immediately I was in the dirt. And that was when I decided I didn't want to play football anymore.
So I assume you couldn't run the ball. So why run play-action passes if you're a bad running team?
We could run the – well, yeah, we couldn't run the ball against them.
Right, this team,
I want to say it was a rainy, cold day, and I want to say they beat us 56 to nothing or something.
See,
like
at that,
that
point, if you can't establish a running game, there's no point in running a bunch of play-action passes.
Well,
I would argue that you weren't a very well-coached team.
No, we had one passing play with three routes, three crossing routes at different distances, and right. I would just roll out and – throw to one of them. That was our one passing play.
Yeah. So I went to Albemarle High School in Charlottesville in Albemarle County. And that ninth grade football team that went 0-10 became a football team my senior year that went 0-10. And you telling that story reminds me of our quarterback, a guy named Tarek Steinberg, who grew up in my neighborhood kind of across the street. Just a phenomenally shifty athlete, and that's why we put him at quarterback. Because I remember watching him, he would pull away from center and start to backpedal, and just like you, he was already being chased. You know, so it was that entire 0-10 year was Tarek running from the defense.
Just turnstiles on the offensive line, just let him go by.
So we're killing time until the 11:30 press conference starts.
Big news, well, big news. Richmond game, noon kickoff, surprise, surprise.
Right.
What television?
ACC Network. NC State and Clemson got moved to ABC at 3:30. Wow. So that's why we're, well, you know, yeah. Since people will be so fired up about the Richmond-Virginia Tech game, right. And go from that to the big ACC game.
And we should note that you're not going to find out what time the Notre Dame game is going to be until
it'll be,
you know,
12
days before kickoff, or maybe even six. Maybe they'll exercise their six-day option.
Well, actually, the Notre Dame game is confirmed to be on ACC Network already. That's,
yes.
So it could be earlier.
Right. Because
they don't have to worry about shifting it to ABC or anything like that.
Right.
That's true. The announcement of it.
Yes. But you would assume that would be the night game on the ACC Network that week.
I'm thinking count your blessings about it being a noon game because UVA played at 11.
Yeah.
Versus a Power 5 team.
Yeah. Well, they don't have to worry about. I mean, you got so many time slots these days that you got to fill for TV purposes. You might as well put the team on television whose fans don't go to games at 11 o'clock.
Zing.
So,
yeah, the crowd didn't exactly look full in Charlottesville.
It wasn't full in Blacksburg either, but it was still twice as many people as what it looked like in Charlottesville.
So you guys know who Riley Wyatt is.
Yes.
Riley graduated from the SMA program, right?
Yeah, she did.
A couple of years ago.
2019,
yeah,
she graduated.
So Riley got a job working for Channel 29 in Charlottesville. And, you know, being a Hokie, being in Charlottesville, she's done a fine job. And she has announced fairly recently that her next gig is going to be, in quotes, this fall. She was not specific about the date.
Yes.
In Richmond. And Riley has, I don't want to put Riley on the spot here, but she's been less kind to UVA ever since she, you know, got the announcement that she's going to Richmond.
Some of her tweets on Saturday seemed like a little subtle jabs at the UVA crowd, just a little poke.
There was one at the UVA crowd, and that's why I brought that up, and I can't remember what it was she said.
What are you going to do, fire me? I'm already leaving.
Exactly. And it's not exactly her main account. I don't think she'd do that on her main account.
I don't think so
either.
But
Riley's got a burner account that if you know what it is, then you know to look for it.
All right. You want to answer a few West Virginia questions before, or are we going to say
that? I don't know anything about them.
We haven't done any research.
So, I mean, like, I, the only player I can name on their team is Doug Nestor.
Yes. So, and that's one of the one question is, who do you match up against Doug Nestor?
I don't think it really
matters. Now, Doug's a guard. Nick confirmed.
Yeah, right guard.
Yeah.
Because was it Hudson or Nestor that left because he wanted to play tackle? Do you remember? That's the party line.
It wasn't Hudson, but I don't think that's why Nestor left. I think Nestor left because his buddies go to West Virginia and his girlfriend goes to West Virginia.
All right.
I think that's the main reason he left.
Yeah. So anyway, he is at guard,
I don't know. I'm not good at studying strengths and weaknesses of offensive linemen because I never played it. Mm-hmm. Will is a former offensive lineman and maybe a better candidate.
Come on, Will, you can answer that question right there.
Yeah, I don't know if Nestor's better
against... Too many concussions.
I don't know if Nestor's better against quick guys or bigger, stronger guys.
He's weighing in at 320.
He's 6'4", correct, Nestor?
He's like 6'6".
6'4", weighing in at 321.
We listed him at 6'6".
Really?
321.
Of course, we list Tenuta at 6'9". And he magically grew 2 inches since last year. So right. maybe give him another year, he'll reach that magical one border of 7 feet.
So I was hoping that I could divert the question into telling some sort of anecdote, but I can't. I can't see any sort of connection. But who knows? You know, I don't know if like Narelle. I thought Narelle Pyler was fairly quiet against Middle Tennessee. Maybe he'll have something for Doug Nestor. Maybe he'll be too quick for him. Or maybe Jordan Williams will be a better matchup, something like that.
Jordan Williams was good against Middle Tennessee.
Yeah.
All right.
Justin Fuente has started his press conference. Nick, we have an update from David Cunningham.
Yep, to answer all of the questions regarding James Mitchell, it is season-ending knee surgery, and we'll have it later this week.
Yeah, so Mitchell's
out for
the year.
So he does not clarify if it's ACL or doesn't really matter. Season-ending knee surgery's season-ending knee surgery.
So. Yeah. So people ask, there's always somebody who comes on the message boards after the games and says, any injury news? And I'll repeat what I always say. Fuente will tell you if somebody's season is over, but he basically won't tell you anything other than that. Yeah. So, that's...
Well, and it was interesting. We rewatched the play where he got hurt right before the podcast, and he popped right back up, walked under his own... I mean, obviously you can walk on it. If it is a torn ACL, not sure what the knee injury is, but it didn't seem like he was in all that much pain.
ACLs generally, a lot of times they're like that. I mean, this is before y'all's time, but I remember being at the practice where Grant Null tore his ACL in the spring of 2002. He popped right back up and was walking, but he was doing something just kind of like he was trying to shake his leg out. And I knew immediately it was a torn ACL.
Yeah.
Like... if it had been a sprained knee and he was just in a tremendous amount of pain, he would have been on the ground. But a torn ACL, a lot of times when you see that injury, the reactions don't necessarily indicate that it would be a serious injury, which is why it always worries me when a guy kind of gets up and he's kind of limping, but at the same time, he's walking off under his own power. Yeah. Sometimes it doesn't mean anything. You know, sometimes the injury is more significant than it seems. And it seems like even Fuente said after the game that the training staff told him that Mitchell was fine.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, and if he was being honest about that, then either the training staff totally misdiagnosed it, or Mitchell just woke up on Sunday morning and his knee was swollen all to hell and was like, uh-oh.
So,
this is much worse than I thought it was.
So let's analyze it. What does this mean?
Well, I mean, Tech has two other good tight ends. I mean, Dulius and Gallo are solid players. No, they're going to be able to – I mean, the playbook itself is not going to change or anything like that. You can't ask them to do some certain things that maybe – they're not going to be as dynamic as, like, oh, you put Mitchell in the slot and he's able to run that slant pattern and break a tackle and have a good gain. My biggest concern is this offense is limited in its personnel when it comes to having a lot of guys who can generate big plays. And James Mitchell can catch a pass out on the flat against UNC, slap a couple guys on the helmets and send them flying through the air and then take off for 20 yards.
Yeah.
So you're down one guy who can do that, and there's just not a lot of others who can.
Well, you're losing a big playmaking guy in Mitchell, but it does seem like this offense is more about scheme than about those weapons. It seems like as long as you got Braxton Burmeister back there who's throwing the football and you don't have to go into some of the younger quarterbacks, there's going to be some options for the team.
It's more about scheme because it has to be more about scheme because there aren't that many playmakers on the offense, yeah, in my opinion.
Yeah.
This is Middle Tennessee runs a pit-like defense, as we discussed. And if you remember back in 2016, Fuente being on the sideline and the camera was on him and he was mic'd up and he was telling Isaiah Ford and Cam Phillips and Bucky Hodges, all right, listen, we know what kind of defensive coverage they're going to play, and there's only one way to beat that. And it's not by scheme. It's by beating their cornerbacks and defensive backs in man coverage, just outplaying them.
And he said, they're not going to change what they're doing, and we're not going
to
change what
I'm doing. So you have to make plays to win this football game. Right. And they did it. And Middle Tennessee comes out and runs a similar defense, and Tech's receivers can't do it.
Yeah.
So
I think the other thing you'll see disappear is they've been using Mitchell a fair amount on the sweep down on the goal line. So
yes.
Be interesting to see. I don't think they'd try that with Gallo. Maybe Dulius. Wasn't Dulius closer to being a wide receiver early in his career?
Well, he played outside receiver in high school. If you're gonna do that sweep with anybody,
it would be
Blumrick.
Yeah,
this is true.
That's true.
But
if Blumrick wasn't so skinny, I'd be like, put him at tight end. But he's pretty thin right
now. You're just not going to run that play to a tight end now. Is what you're.
That's right.
Well, and Nick brings up a good point. Taysom Hill, could that kind of be what Blumrick fits into now if they try and put him at tight end a little bit more?
That's a good question, because now the thing is, like, I have no idea if he can catch. I assume he can, because
he was at tight end at Texas A&M.
He was.
Yeah, but the main thing, he was, but you know, it's still hard to say because like he never played, right?
Right.
at least not outside special teams. But generally quarterbacks do have good hands because these days they're not under center. They're catching shotgun snaps and you have to have soft hands to do that.
Yep.
So I don't think that would be an issue for him.
I just wonder, just wild thought, I just wonder if we're going to see Blumrick in the slot at all, filling that James Mitchell role. I don't think you'll see him in line trying to block. I don't think he's
big
enough.
No, absolutely not.
So,
but maybe just kind of those gadget plays, like you mentioned, the tight end jet sweep, could it be him who's taking it?
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see how Brad Cornelson maneuvers this without James Mitchell, and we're going to analyze the loss of James Mitchell a lot more on Wednesday's podcast as we get set for West Virginia. Yeah. I think that closes episode 190. I want to ask Chris, what is coming up on TechSideline.com this week?
Normal week of content. We'll have a couple Brandon Patterson pieces. I'll do an Inside the Numbers. We'll have another podcast. I assume you're doing Monday Thoughts today.
Yeah. I've got enough in my head that it'll go into an article today and be up by 4 or 5 o'clock.
So normal week of content now that we're into Saturday games instead of a Friday game.
Yeah.
And then I'm sure David will have something on the press conference today and James Mitchell's loss as well. So
yes.
Justin Fuente speaking to the media right now. And then we'll also have Tech Talk Live notes tomorrow as Jack Brezendine is in studio with us today. He'll write those up as well.
Thank God we're ending because my right arm and my right leg have fallen asleep.
I've been trying to keep it as short as possible. We had to wait for Fuente to take the mic, but Yeah, hopefully we'll sort out Chris's mic by the next time too.
We'll get Chris hooked up with what we got there, and then when the new boom arm comes in, he'll have the rocket thing. Man, that thing's almost a $500 boom arm. It's gonna be awesome.
Well, hopefully he won't be able to pull it off the table like he did.
Well,
last time.
It's so awesome it might tip the table over all by itself. So we'll see.
Well, that'll do it for episode 190 of the Tech Sideline Podcast, brought to you by the Southeast Regional Training Center. I want to thank Will Stewart, our founder and general manager across the way. You can find him at Will Stewart TSL on Twitter. Chris Coleman to my left, lead analyst and columnist at Tech Sideline. You can find him at Chris Coleman TSL. Nick Brown doing a good job in the seat to the right, and behind the scenes, Malcolm Stewart, the best producer in the land. I'm Jake Lyman signing off today, and we will talk to you later on this week to get you ready for West Virginia. Have a great week, Hokies fans. We'll see you next time.